Things are hotting up in the Middle East, with Israel about to imminently launch an attack on Iran due to its missile strikes on the 1st of October. Talk of World War III is now common, as anything can escalate out of control and beyond the region. Iran and Israel have been enemies for decades, and now their enmity has spilled out into the public view with devastating consequences. So how have we got here? Where are things going? How do we make sense of things? I have Geopolity founder Adnan Khan to help us with this today. Adnan, things are going a bit crazy.
Yeah, that's probably one way to put it.
We're currently in a place where we're all waiting for Israel to attack Iran. I think we all know it's going to happen, in order to see how far they'll go with this and if this will actually break out into a wider regional war. So what's the build-up to this? Can you give us some information about how we got here in the first place?
So obviously, use of the context is really the last year you've had this slaughter in Gaza. In fact, the UN has just said that they consider an extermination was taking place in Gaza. So for most of the year, Iran did a lot of talking. They didn't do anything. In fact, when Ismail Haniyeh visited Tehran just after October 7th, he was told by Ayatollah Khomeini that because you didn't inform us, we're not going to get involved. So really, Iran was on the sidelines. They didn't really do anything apart from make speeches. Then everything changed in April. What Israel did was it launched an airstrike on the Iranian embassies in Syria, and eventually Iran responded to this. So what's happened here is Israel has attacked an embassy, which is considered out of bounds. It's, you know, the international system works where embassies are not attacked. And Iran then responded by carrying out a drone airstrike or missile strike on mainland Israel. So this was quite unprecedented for Israel, that is so worried about its security, to see missiles and drones coming over mainland Israel. However, this attack Iran did on back in the 1st of April, they telegraphed this. They informed the regional rulers they're going to do it, where they're going to do it from, where to expect it. They even informed America through indirect channels that they are going to do this. In effect, what they were saying to America, we have to do this to save face. We don't want an escalation. That's why it's actually a limited strike, what they did. Although Israel is making existential, it was a very, very limited strike. So in response to this, and as things have been escalated, the last 2 months, we've seen Israel completely obliterate Iran's main proxy, Hezbollah. We've seen them now turn from Gaza into Lebanon. So the war is expanding. And then we saw on the 1st of October, Iran responded again with around 200 ballistic missile strikes on mainland Israel. And this was in response to the assassination of the Hezbollah leader, Nasrallah, and the devastation they were causing in Lebanon, and in response to the pager and the walkie-talkie attacks that's seen significant Hezbollah members either injured or passed away. So what's happened when you put all this together, Yusuf, is Israel's security has been called into question. Israel and Netanyahu, that guarantee Israeli security, there's now a massive question mark over that. The fact that there's been two large-scale attacks on mainland Israel, although Israel has been able to deal with these with significant help from the West, the fact that another country, another state, is engaging in an attack on Israel, their security has been brought into question. And Netanyahu's whole career is, I'm strong on security. I will do whatever is necessary to maintain Israeli security. And for 2 days at least, in April and October, there was massive question marks over this. I'm sure you've seen the videos. You've got the sky lit up with missiles and drones. You've seen some of them landing. I mean, the impact of these strikes has been very, very minimal in terms of deaths, in terms of devastation. You can't even compare them to what Israel's been doing in Gaza and in Lebanon. So Israel has to respond now. It's been attacked. Netanyahu's career's on the line. And the issue, and probably the last question here really is, will Israel respond with a proportionate response? Or will Israel take this opportunity to try and achieve some of his long-held desires of carrying out a out-of-proportion attack and causing significant damage?
Israel and Iran have got a long history of being enemies. Why is this, Adnan? Can you tell us a bit more about the history between these two nations?
So interestingly, Yusuf, up until 1979, Israel and Iran were the closest allies in the region. Under the Shah, they were both on the same side in the Cold War. The Shah was a very Western-leaning autocrat. Mossad and Israeli military officers would regularly go to Tehran. The Secret Service and the military in Tehran would regularly go to Tel Aviv. In fact, Israel even had offices in Iran. This obviously changed then after 1979 when the revolution happened and the clerics came to power. And effectively, what happened was is the clerics, they had ambition for the region. They wanted to be the regional power. And obviously, one of the biggest obstacles to that was Israel, who had the same ambition as well. So from 1979 onwards, Iran and Israel became competitors. And from then, you've seen the animosity play out. So what Iran did is it established proxies in a number of countries. So they established them in Lebanon, they established them in Iraq, established them in Palestine, in the West Bank and Gaza. They backed Hamas. You see it in Syria. They backed the regime there and then they intervened for the regime when there was an uprising for the last decade and even in Afghanistan as well. So as far as Israel is concerned, Iran seems to be expanding and it seems to be expanding around Israel as well. So as a result, the animosity has only grown. So Israel, it views Iran as a threat. Iran has ambitions. Iran has eyes on the region and Israel needs to have security. So from 1979 onwards, they became enemies and you see the animosity plays out in assassinations, in cyber attacks, in direct attacks sometimes as well. The main aspect of their competition, it plays out in the shadows. Iran and Israel are quite far from each other. Iran doesn't have much conventional capability. Israel doesn't have the capability to launch direct attacks in a sustained manner on Iran. So what you find is their battle is through assassinations, targeting scientists, targeting each other's military-industrial complex. Israel has regularly targeted Iran's nuclear program. And what Israel also does, it targets Hezbollah, it targets Hamas, it targets Iran's proxies in the surrounding countries as well. So they're enemies because both of them, you know, you can only have one king in the castle and both of these guys want to be kings. So they're both competitors.
That's a very interesting point because ultimately what you're saying is that Iran's enmity towards Israel isn't actually based on the fact that it is occupying Palestinian territory, but rather it's because it's a competitor in the region. Am I reading that right, Adnan?
Absolutely. The Iranian clerics, they use Islam or Shia Islam as a cover that they have religious ambitions, that they're on a religious struggle. And that's really to get the Muslim world involved in their struggle. However, time and time again, what you see is the clerics put Iran first or put regime survival first. And that's why when Hamas carried out October 7th, Ayatollah Khomeini is very clear. You didn't inform us. We ain't getting involved. You're on your own. Even Hezbollah, they've had to really deal with Israel largely on their own with their own capabilities. Iran has largely stayed out. In fact, the strikes they've done on Israel are probably their only contribution. Even these strikes were quite limited as well. So like Saudi Arabia, Iran uses Islam as to gain legitimacy as a cover. But the actions have shown time and time again because they pick and choose what issues to get involved in. When they pick and choose, that means your agenda cannot be religious because you're picking and choosing. And that's why Iran, the clerics, despite what they say, they're really no different to the other regional rulers.
The US, it seems to be a key relationship for both these countries. So Israel remains a very, very close ally to the US, whilst Iran is seen as an enemy. Can you outline the relations between these two countries and the US, and how does this actually affect the wider region?
Okay, we need to look at how the US looks at this region. The US emerged the superpower after World War II. So you had the Soviet Union that emerged as a power, and then you had the US. And the US wanted to be the dominant power in this region because the region is too important. This is the region that at that time, it was very clear that it had the world's oil, it has a large amount of the world's gas, and it had an increasing population, so human resources. And if you look at its location, Yusuf, the Middle East connects with Africa, it connects with Eurasia, it connects with South Asia. So really, it's right in the middle of all the other regions. So whoever has influence on this region has an influence over strategic resources and from a geographical perspective gives you access to other regions. So America very, very quickly, even I remember the State Department at the time, they wrote many reports that this is the emerging region and we're going to make sure we control it if we want to be a global power. Now, the US faced a couple of challenges in order to achieve this. The first was the Middle East at the time was dominated by the Europeans, specifically the French and the British. They carved up this region after World War I. They created the countries in this region. And most of the nations in the region were monarchies. If you look at Iraq, if you look at Iran, if you looked at Saudi, if you look across the region, the Gulf you had laws of monarchy. So the whole idea is the British and the French established these in order to maintain their loyalty. This was a problem for America. America obviously had to deal with this. And then the communist threat was emerging. The Soviet Union wanted to spread communism into this region. So these were the two challenges America faced if it wanted to be the dominant power. So the US dealt with the Europeans by supporting the emergence of new leaders and military officers. So many of these military officers you find in Egypt, in Syria, in Iraq, they overthrew the monarchies that the British and the French had established. And when the Cold War was beginning, what America did is the whole strategy was is they wanted to create a containment line from Norway down to Turkey, down all the way to Pakistan and all the way to Japan. So the Middle East, they wanted to support nations and arm them in order to stop the expansion of communism. And any country that was threatened by communism, America was prepared to help them. So Israel, Iran became the frontline nations in this particular region to stop the spread of communism. So the Shah, who was the leader of Iran, he joined the West in the battle against the spread of communism. And he was armed to the teeth to the point where Iran became probably the most powerful country in the region. And the other country that saw it needed to develop was Israel. So America armed them as well. So these two countries, Iran and Israel, actually became very close allies during the Cold War. So the problem for America was is that the Shah became so powerful that he actually developed ambitions. He wanted to become the regional hegemon. In fact, he actually started to criticize America and he started to challenge America as well. So this was very embarrassing for America. So what America did was they overthrew him in 1979, and this cleared the way for the clerics to come to power. And this point is very important. America actually supported the emergence of the clerics in 1979. And the reason why they did this is Iran was just too important a country. They couldn't just overthrow the Shah and allow democracy to prevail. And America had concluded that the only people that were organized enough, the only people that had some level of organization in Iran that could take over off the Shah were the clerics. So you had many groups at the time, Yusuf. You had the communists, you had students, you had academics, you had these Western-leaning people. But the American embassy in Iran, the CIA, their report was is that no one's organized enough apart from the clerics. So America supported the rise of the clerics in order to overthrow the Shah. However, America learned a lesson from the Shah, which is if you support someone and you arm him to the teeth, what's to stop him from becoming independent and going his own way? So what the US did immediately after supporting the clerics to power is they basically worked to isolate Iran in order to control and contain it. So what they did was they helped the clerics to power, and trouble started straight away. The clerics took over the American embassy. And what America did, they put sanctions on Iran and they isolated them from the region. And so what America has done from that day onwards till today is when they need Iran in the region, they will remove the sanctions. There will be a nuclear deal. When the job is done, they'll bring back the sanctions in order to contain them. And this is because they don't want to happen again what happened with the Shah. In terms of Israel, became a forward base in the region during the Cold War. America saw Israel. America supported the establishment of Israel as soon as it was established. I think America was one of the first countries to accept it. At the time, Yusuf, when Israel came about, America wanted to have good relations with the emerging Israel and the Arab rulers because of oil. And in fact, America didn't actually openly support the establishment of Israel because they thought that's going to cause tension with the Arab rulers. However, events really went ahead without America. So America accepted the establishment of Israel. And when the Cold War was beginning, Israel opened its arms up to America. They wanted American arms. It wanted to militarily develop. So for America, Israel is a forward base in the region. America sees Israel as a tool to achieve its regional objectives. It sees it as a way to balance other nations as well. And that's why America's strategy for the Middle East is a balance of power strategy. What it wants to do is support different powers who balance each other out. And if any one power becomes too powerful, you use the other countries. So that's why for Israel, its most important relationship is America. For Iran, whether it hates America or loves America, its main relationship is America. And as far as America's concerned, it has to control this region. If it doesn't, another power will. And if another power controls it, they will become too powerful because this region is so important.
If America actually aided the clerics to come into power in Iran, is there ultimately some sort of deep loyalty that the clerics have towards America?
So I don't think it's actually deep loyalty. I think what it is, America's aiding you to come to power, and that's a good thing for you because it means that you're you'll come to power and you'll have stable position because you've got the support of the global power. However, what you find is rather than they are loyal, what you find is Iran, it wants to be a regional power and it can engage with America to do this or it can oppose America. So sometimes it does oppose America when there's a problem. On other occasions, it works with America. So a good example, in Iraq and Afghanistan, Iran and America were on the same page. They worked together. In the north of Afghanistan, Iran stabilized it. America made very positive statements about Iran. In fact, when the Afghan campaign was bleeding to death, American policymakers were saying that, look, we can work with Iran. This issue, we've got the same interest. In Iraq, when America was bleeding to death, they relied on Iran going into the political system and stopping the insurgency. So what you find is Iran's got interests, and the biggest challenge is the global power. So it has to engage the global power and can't challenge the global power. So it has to engage it. And so that's why Iranians have always said that we've always hated Saddam. You don't like Saddam. We want a stable Afghanistan. You want a stable Afghanistan. We want stability in Palestine. You want stability in Palestine. So look, America and Iran actually have the same interest. Let's work together. What America does, though, is sometimes says, okay, we trust you. Let's talk. On other times, it says, we can't trust you. You are a unstable partner in the region, and therefore we need to contain you. So what America does is when it needs Iran, it's very friendly. Let's have a nuclear deal. Let's remove sanctions. When it wants to contain Iran, then it brings back the sanctions and it isolates them as well. So both of them have got their interests. Both of them are trying to use each other. Obviously, if you think about it, if America uses Iran when it wants to, and then it stops Iran increasing its power in the region, really America is getting the better deal. It's getting the better element out of this perspective. So you do have people in Iran who hate America. You do have policymakers who believe America is the enemy, but then you have many others who believe that, look, we're going to need to work with America. And in fact, when America comes knocking, that means we are a power in the region. Why is America engaging with us if we are nobody? So, you know, it's not as straightforward as they're loyal. It's more they see as we need to work with America in order for us to achieve our regional goals. Now, that's very different to the public perception they give. The public perception they give America the enemy. We're at war with America. We're at war with America's allies. That's the perception they've built. And they keep saying that whilst you find behind the scenes, they have no problem engaging and working with America.
Another question that I had is, you mentioned America's plan for the region, or the way it manages the region, is ultimately balancing of powers. Now, with history has a habit of repeating itself. So Iran initially under the Shah, they supported it, they built it up, and eventually it challenged America. Are we seeing something similar happening today with Israel? Ultimately, it seems like the US hasn't got hold of Israel. It can't rein it in. Israel keeps rejecting any proposals that the US is making. Is this Israel actually trying to break out from under America's shadow?
It is to some extent. The problem you've got at the moment between Israel and America is you used to have the left and the right in Israel. The left have been more or less decimated. You only got the right. And the right wing view in Israel is, for our security, we need the whole of historic Palestine. They don't believe in a two-state solution. They don't believe in a Palestinian state. In fact, a month ago, they passed a resolution in parliament that they refused to accept two-state solution. The two-state solution, Yusuf, is the American plan for peace, in inverted commas, in this region. So you have a Palestinian state alongside an Israeli state. And that's a big problem for Israel, because the West Bank, which is a large territory, if that becomes a Palestinian state, there's no way Israel can secure itself. The West Bank is large territory. It's in the mountains. It overlooks the heartland of Israel. So that's why Israel has always been building settlements and expanding. And Israelis and Zionists actually have agenda beyond historic Palestine. You know, they talk about greater Israel. And to some extent, that's what they're doing at the moment. They've got the opportunity now to do things to achieve greater Israel. So this is a major point of difference between America and Israel. America sees Israel in borders within historic Palestine alongside a Palestinian state. The Israelis don't see it like that. So what they've been doing is, as America's been busy in Iraq and Afghanistan, as it's been busy in its global role, Israel slowly has been building settlements. It's been expanding. It's been expelling the Palestinian people. So what's happened in the last year we've seen is Netanyahu keeps disobeying Biden. He keeps not listening to the White House. The White House has told him that you can respond after October 7th, but don't go too far. Don't do a full-scale invasion. Then he started carrying out a massacre of so many people. America then criticized him. You're massacring civilians. Biden then came out with a ceasefire deal. Netanyahu has been dragging his feet. In fact, we now know, Yusuf, that a peace deal was agreed between Hezbollah and Iran. America and France were mediating this, and Netanyahu was signed off on it. And 2 days later, they still assassinated Hassan Nasrallah. And this has been a constant pattern. What Israel is doing is it listens to America, and either it convinces American officials of its logic and then they come around to it, or they say one thing to America and do the opposite as well. And obviously the problem America's got here, Yusuf, is you've raised a spoiled child. And what the spoiled child is doing is what they do, which is they're not listening, they're disobeying. And so America is now having to deal with Israel without undermining it. America has invested in Israel for 7 decades. It's built up its military capabilities. It's built up its security. It's built up its economy. It can't let this go down the drain. And that's why you're seeing Israel seems to be doing stuff. In fact, sometimes it looks like Israel's making America's policy and America's following along. And it's election year as well. Because of election year, you can't be seen to not be supporting Israel. So there definitely is a problem, but it's a problem of their own creation in it.
Iran and Israel, they've been in what's known as a shadow war. Very rarely do you see things spill out in the open, but now it has. How do you see this actually playing out?
So the reason why there's been a shadow war, Yusuf, is because Iran is probably 100 times bigger than Israel. There is a 700-mile plus geography between them. And this geography means that it's quite difficult for them to directly attack each other. Iran is not like Jordan or Egypt where it shares a border. So no one's going to be invading each other. And this is why the battle between Israel and Iran would be through missiles and airstrikes. It won't be through invasions. It won't be through a land force. It won't be through the ocean. So up until now, what you find is the war between them has been in the shadows. It's been through assassinations, cyber attacks, proxy groups. Now it's spilled out. And the reason why it's spilled out is, as far as Israel's concerned, when they're battling Hamas and when they're battling Hezbollah, they say the head of the octopus is Iran. And because Iran has now attacked them, now they feel they've got the cover to directly go for Iran. And that's why there's a worry in America that the response Israel will do now, it may go too far. So that's why there's been talk, Israel, will they go for the nuclear reactors? Will they go for the oil infrastructure? Will they go through civilian infrastructure? Will they do a Gaza job over there? And this has worried America because Israel may go too far and this may spill over. So this is the major problem between them. Now, even in any airstrike Israel carries out, Iran is 700 miles away. This is really getting to the limits of Israel's air capability, because whichever jets go to Iran, they're going to have to make probably a 1,500-mile round trip. So this now means they're going to have to do aerial refueling, and this is really getting to the limits of Israel's capability. So Israel will need American logistical help and American supplies. So this is why on Wednesday, 10th of October, Netanyahu presented his plan in a phone call to Kamala Harris and Biden. And from the looks of it, what America's done is got rid of the sharper ends of Israel's plan, but generally supported it. So America accepts Israel needs to respond. Netanyahu is saying, I have to respond because Israeli security has been brought into question. What America's saying is don't go too far. So even when Iran responds to Israel, America says to them, don't go too far. So Israel's going to need American help in this. Now, Iran, on the other hand, Yusuf, it has very little conventional capabilities. Iran's capabilities really are its proxy forces. And that's what they've been using. So Hezbollah, Hamas, the groups in Iraq, and the Houthis as well. Iran also has very capable missiles. In fact, it probably has the most diverse range of missiles in the region. Now, Iran hasn't used most of these. The what that shows you, Yusuf, is the strikes Iran has done on Israel. These are limited strikes to save face and then to show their people, look, we've done something, but not to escalate. So although Israel is making out these strikes to be like existential, rarely, I mean, no Israeli died. In fact, the only death was a Palestinian who was hit by shrapnel in the attack in October. The missile strikes that Israel did back in April, these were telegraphed. They had hours to prepare for these. So that shows you Iran doesn't want to escalate. Iran isn't the one escalating. The only one escalating, the only one who wants a regional war, the only one who wants World War III is actually Israel, because it serves its agenda.
Are we on the verge of World War III then?
Israel senses that finally it has an opportunity now to attack Iran directly. And it largely has US support for this too. So Iran is really the only obstacle for Israel's regional agenda. If you think about it, Yusuf, the threats Israel generally deals with on a day-to-day basis are proxy groups. Hezbollah, Hamas, the Iraqi proxy groups, Houthis. Now, these are groups, they're guerrilla groups. They can't defeat Israel and invade Israel and bring to the end Israel. The only people that can threaten Israel's very existence are the nation states in the region, Egypt, Turkey, Jordan, Iran, combined or individually. So Iran has always been a problem for Israel. Iran supporting proxy groups. So now Israel now has the cover and the opportunity to finally put back Iranian power. And that's how they are seeing it for the moment. So as I mentioned, it's only Israel that's looking for a regional war because it's always wanted to expand and achieve a greater Israel. And they don't really care how they achieve this. They don't care if they have to burn the whole region to get greater Israel. We've seen what's happened in the last year in Gaza. We've seen the documentaries by Al Jazeera and others that show what Israeli soldiers are up to in Gaza. We've seen them take out hospitals. We've seen them take out cemeteries. We've seen them kill mostly women and children in Gaza. They've now started the same thing in Lebanon. They don't really care. Their agenda has always been, we want greater Israel. We have a right to greater Israel. We are the chosen people. And the only thing that's been containing them actually has either been America or has actually been another power, which is Iran. But for them, this is an opportunity that they can't really not take. Iran's strikes were very, very limited. Iran actually had the opportunity to really hurt Israel. They didn't, because that's not the intention. Their intention is, we're going to fight in the shadows with you to contain you, but we're not going to engage in a direct conventional battle with you because there's a capability issue. And that's basically what they've been doing. And to finish on this, Yusuf, when Hezbollah was being decimated by Israel, the Iranian president was in the US at the UN annual summit. So it really shows you where his priority was. Your premier proxy is being decimated and you're in America trying to get a nuclear deal with America. That really shows you the Iranian clerics where their priority is currently.
With Israel trying to become the regional power, isn't that a threat to the other nations in the area? For example, Saudi, Egypt, etc., etc. I don't tend to see, or I'm not seeing any response by these Arab rulers in regards to this escalation. And what do you make of that? What side will they take, if any?
So you would think, Yusuf, that that's how the Muslim world should see it, that Israel is the enemy and Iran's escalation is a good thing. But what you find is the Gulf leaders in Saudi, they have historically seen Iran as the enemy rather than Israel. In fact, the Gulf leaders and Saudi Arabia, before October 7th, they were normalizing relations with Israel. So MBS has privately even said to Netanyahu that he supports the escalation against Iran. So all these leaders, the Gulf leaders and Saudi, they've always wanted to see a weakened Iran because they don't like Iran's expansionist agenda, Iran supporting proxy groups. So that's why you find that if Israel is going to weaken Iran, they actually are supporting that. So publicly for their people, they're saying that we're neutral. So that's why Iran has actually publicly said that if any of the regional leaders support Israel, if they give them airspace, you will become targets. We will target oil infrastructure because you are supporting the enemy against us. So MBS just said, I think, about a week ago in an interview, he really said, I don't really care about Palestine, but unfortunately my people do, so I have to show that I care. You know, his view is purely so narrow. It's his national or his own personal interests. And his interests are, he wants to be close to America and Israel. In fact, he has a very close relationship with Netanyahu. So he's actually been pretty happy, MBS, of what Israel is actually doing. Privately, Yusuf, most of the leaders in the region, they are anti-Iran and they'd rather see Iran weakened rather than Israel. And if Israel is going to do it, they are going to support it privately. Publicly, they can't because their people are against Israel because Israel is an occupier. So really what this shows you, Yusuf, is if Iran didn't have a sectarian agenda, it could call on the regional rulers to unify against Israel, which would be game over for Israel. But because it had a sectarian agenda, it can't rely on them. If anything, they're more united, the regional rulers, with Israel than they are with Iran. That's the scenario we're in.
Is the US elections and the outcome of these elections, is it likely to impact what we're seeing at this moment in time?
So both candidates, Yusuf, they said that they support Israel and Israel has the right to self-defense. None have offered any specifics. So Kamala Harris has said we need a two-state solution. Trump has said I will end this in a day. But none of them really given any specifics. So we know Trump is very close to the Zionists. You see in his last term, he gave the Zionists and pro-Israelis everything. He needed their support to be in office. On the other hand, Kamala Harris, she doesn't really have much foreign policy experience. So what she's done is she just continued with statements supportive of Israel. And she's been talking about we need a two-state solution in the region soon. So really, Biden was the foreign policy expert. Biden's been, I think, the head of the Select Foreign Affairs Committee in America for decades. Kamala Harris is a bit of an unknown in this area. So what she's been doing this election year. But you've got to remember, Yusuf, up until two, three months ago, Kamala Harris was the number two in the Democrats. She wasn't even standing for the election. All of a sudden, things have changed now. Now she's the presidential candidate. And in some polls, she's even ahead. She potentially could be president in less than a month's time. So what you find is she's got to learn about many things that she never has. I mean, she's from a legal background. She's been the vice president, not a great one. In fact, up until Biden messing up the debate, everybody had forgotten about her. All of a sudden, she'd been thrust into the limelight. So naturally, she needs the pro-Israel support in America. So what she's tried to do is try to take a middle path where she doesn't have to commit to anything. So what you've really got, whoever the president is after the November election and they take office in January, is Netanyahu and Israel need to be brought in line. They are doing things which is not in the American national interest. So the issue is, will any of them do that? And that's probably how we have to look at the impact of the elections.
Thanks for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issues we've raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolity.com. You can also learn more on other issues by accessing our website. You'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.